All right, welcome back to Hate Fighting Podcast. I'm Cody Worsham, digital media reporter for LSU Athletics, joined as always by your favorite number 18, Jacob Hester. Mr. Hester, welcome to the show, as always.
You've got a great title.
My title is much longer than that. I can't go through all that. Digital media reporter, crisis and strategic.
I was just about to say, and you left like half of it off.
It's like you when you played at LSU. You were fullback slash running back slash special team standout slash number 18. And there's a lot of slashes there, but slashes are good.
Slash safety for 2 weeks before they realized I couldn't cover anybody. So I'm here for it.
I love that story. Happy anniversary, by the way.
Happy anniversary to you as well.
July 28th, gang. It's pretty awesome. 9 years for me and my lovely wife, 14 for you and your lovely wife. So we'll be celebrating with a dinner tonight because I love my wife more than you love your wife, obviously, because you're not taking her to dinner tonight.
Oh, boy. We're going to lunch, but we're with the kiddos because we don't have someone to watch the four kiddos.
Yeah, so that's the biggest issue is the kids, especially this time of year. When didn't you, like, get married and have, like, where did you talk about this the other day? Or I read about it. Like, you had, like, a two-day honeymoon.
We had a two-day honeymoon in San Francisco because it's July 28th, so what is coming? Well, football camp is coming.
It's right around the
corner. In fact, I did not see Katie for the first 8 or 9 anniversaries that we had because I was always in training camp.
See, now that's smart. That's good strategy. You've set the bar really, really low.
I mean, it's extremely low.
Just my presence is enough. Are y'all, like, gift givers, gift exchangers on anniversaries?
I don't like gifts.
Yeah.
I don't need a gift.
Me either.
I like to give gifts, but I don't want you to give me a gift. Like, that is not what I want. That is not my love language.
Love? I was about to go with the 5 love languages. So, what are yours?
So there we go.
Are you a gift giver? Is that how you
explain? I'm a gift. Yeah, I love giving gifts. I don't like receiving them.
Okay.
I don't know why. It's never been the deal
speak
for me.
You can speak one language or want to communicate in one language, but want another language to be given to you.
I mean, maybe affirmation.
Affirmation.
Who doesn't like a good attaboy?
I am a strong words of affirmation and physical affection. I like a nice little hug or a nice little.
Well, next time I see you, like, dap it up.
Little.
Like, I'm gonna go in for the bro hug.
Yes.
You're probably just talking about from other people, but I'm gonna help you out.
Yeah.
There.
And but see, the wife is quality time. What's the fifth one that I'm missing? This is bad because it's one of her languages that I can't think of it right now. Quality time. Words of affirmation.
See,
acts of service, and of course, I forgot that one, but that's a big one. That's a big one for her.
I think a lot of people listening to this podcast
doing great on my
that
anniversary.
One.
Don't know how we made it 9 years so far, but hey, she's put up with me, so God bless her. Okay, enough marriage talk. Let's talk a little football, and I want to do a couple things today. I want to talk first, just more newsy type stuff, and then we'll get to the offensive line, defensive line stuff later as we continue our 2-a-days and position previews with LSU football. And then we're also going to talk to a legend going into the Hall of Fame, Alan Faneca. Is going to call and we're going to talk to him for a few minutes, which is a good fit for the offensive line, defensive line. But let's talk current events. You were at SEC Media Days. What was the pulse of the general media? I've only been to like 1 or 2 SEC Media Days. It's just not an event that I've ever really gone to a whole lot, but I know it's a place where everyone gathers and you get a real pulse for what the world of college football and particularly SEC football is thinking. So obviously conference expansion sort of came on the back end of that. We'll talk about that in a second, but before we get to that, the pulse on LSU football from all the media that you talked to last week.
Okay, so a lot of people that I truly respect, a lot of people that know football inside and out, not only former players, but people that have been doing this for a long time, kind of the narrative when they saw us at Media Day, of course, they wanted to talk LSU, and they all said, like, to a man, to a woman, they were like, hey, we know LSU has got some players, and they're ready for a bounce-back year. But it was funny. It was one of those deals where they were kind of surprised. Like, how do people not know that LSU has the Jimmys and Joes?
Yeah.
As we're sitting here and they're going through the names. And so what I got from SEC Media Day was a lot of people are expecting LSU to bounce back and bounce back in a big way. And they kind of like the role that they're taking because I don't think they're necessarily being disrespected. But when you hear all the preseason polls, right, there's a lot of conversation of where do they fall in the pecking order? And a lot of people I talked to said, hey, we will not be surprised if LSU is right there towards the top. I mean, you had people that were extremely high on them. I mean, my guy Barrett Salee works for CBS Sports, right? I mean, he was a guy who's like, look, I can't look at LSU's roster and not have them at a double-digit win total, right? And that was kind of really the theme of Media Day for me was how many people liked where LSU was as far as being able to kind of play that underdog role, which it seems crazy that, you know, LSU would ever be an underdog, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Right? When you have a season that was not what you wanted to be a year ago, but you do have some positive momentum with how you finished that season and then with who you have coming back compared to who you lost the year before, it was really refreshing to hear other people have that thought, because you never know, like in our position, you're like, man, am I just too close to this?
Am I pumping too much sunshine?
You said it. I was trying to stay away from it, but you're right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what it is. And so that was really the feel I got for LSU and what the expectation is for this season.
That's good, because I do think sometimes we are too close to it. I know I am. Like, literally, the place signs my paycheck. So, of course, I'm going to have a bias towards it. So it's good to get outside that bias. I think it's probably for a couple of reasons. One, last year was so unprecedented in a number of ways. You could throw out COVID entirely, and you obviously can't do that, but you could throw it out entirely and just look at the amount of talent that LSU lost from the year before and the amount of experience that LSU lost. No team's ever gone through that before.
Right.
So it's not really fair to judge LSU by the normal standard, because they weren't under normal conditions. Then you add in the COVID aspect. Then you add in the fact that you also not only lost talent, but you lost coordinators and you had to learn new systems. And so it was kind of...
And leadership.
Yeah, and leadership. And so it was Murphy's Law, yeah. Right? It was Murphy's Law at its finest. And so now this year, you almost expect it to go back. They talk about regression to the mean, progression to the mean. LSU progressing back to where they want to be. And we've talked about the numbers. I think LSU is returning 90% of its offensive snaps, 75% of its defensive snaps. So to hear that, that takeaway is really great. Okay, so on the back end of SEC Media Days, I think the news started coming out Thursday. Were y'all
Wednesday?
So it was Wednesday. So y'all were up there.
It was Wednesday.
Okay, so what was it like to be there as the news that Texas and Oklahoma are interested in joining the SEC starts coming out and you're up there? I mean, it's just a big chaos, right?
I mean, it was wild, and my own story was even crazier, because I had just gotten off of our SiriusXM show, and so my phone was charging, because, of course, it was media day, so like by 11, your phone was dead with the stuff you're trying to do,
uh-huh.
And so I'm charging it in there, and I was going to go say hello to Jimbo Fisher. He was my coordinator at LSU for 3 years, so I was just going to go say hello to him. He was about to walk by, and all of a sudden, I saw all the beat writers, like, running in circles. Like, I'm like, okay, something's going on. Who got fired? Who messed up? What happened? Because you've been in situations when it happens, you know something's going on and it's big. And so, of course, then they kind of start to say, oh my gosh, here's what's happening. Texas, Oklahoma trying to join the SEC. And then you go back to your phone, it's like 30 messages.
Yeah.
But it was weird and wild to be there in that scene, because Texas A&M, Ross Bjork, he was the only AD at Media Days of the 14 schools, and he was about to go on the podium, and you had Texas A&M and Jimbo about to go on the podium. And
I'm having a PR like
Texas A&M and Texas. I don't know if you know this. They don't really like each other, right? And so, and then all the people that cover Texas A&M, like, their phone's blown up because they're a big piece of this. And it was very surreal to be there in that moment and kind of see it all play out.
What are your thoughts? I mean, it's still early, but I know the latest news is that the SEC put out a statement yesterday about it and obviously acknowledging that it's happening or that the process has begun. But everyone's kind of tiptoeing right around it and making sure they do everything right legally. Texas and Oklahoma, I think, have officially announced that they're not going to renew their grant of rights in 2025. Right. And so, you know, is it going to happen in 2025? It sounds like it might happen sooner than that based on the news reporting. I really know, because I haven't been that close to it. But what are your thoughts on the possibility, probability that this is going to happen, Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, just that, but maybe even ripple effects from that?
The ripple effect is going to be very interesting, because I don't think we quite know what that will be.
Yeah,
because
crazy
you're going to have other conferences try to one-up what the SEC is doing, but I don't think you can do it. So the competitor in me, I absolutely love this. I truly do, because we look at everything from a football perspective in a lot of ways, because it's the revenue,
yeah,
it's the big money, it's the big ticket, all those things, right? But when you look at this, obviously football, it's like Oklahoma, they've won like, what, 6 straight Big 12 titles. They've been in the college football playoff. We know the brand that Texas is. But also, because you know I enjoy my Olympic sports, I start to think about how much they're going to go up.
Yeah.
Softball, you're kidding me? You're adding Oklahoma and Texas. Basketball, 2 good programs.
Gymnastics.
Oklahoma elite. Already to the dominant SEC. Same thing with softball. Yep. SEC's dominant. You got like all 13 teams, because Vandy doesn't play, so we don't have 14. All 13 make the postseason typically every year, and you're adding an Oklahoma and Texas. Baseball. I mean, there's so many different things that this is going to elevate what is already the greatest conference on earth. So to me as a competitor, I love adding 2 programs like that.
Yeah.
Now, I know a lot of people want to say, be careful, it's going to be a super conference. Okay, well, tell me what's wrong with having a super conference when everything gets elevated, the revenue is going to be fantastic, and you're going to have marquee matchups all the time. And part of the scheduling thing that a lot of people like to argue about, well, that's going to have to change. So you're going to get your wish there as well. So for me, honestly, personally, I've tried to find a negative. Yeah. I've tried to find something that is going to affect the team and the conference that I care about, LSU and the SEC. And I'm having a very hard time doing so.
It's exciting to me. I get caught up in the branding side of things because that's where my head is and my world is. And I think it's super exciting. Curious, we talked about the ripple effects and the future of the sport and how it evolves. And I think the pushback there is tradition, right? This is the way things have always been. But yeah. I think you've seen with the addition of even just Texas A&M and Missouri, how that's added to the conference, the SEC network, how that's added to the experience. So college football has always been an evolving sport, right? Like going back to the creation of the SEC, going back yes. to the expansion of the SEC, even when Tulane was in the conference and Tulane leaves the conference. Well, that was obviously traditional and that went away, but
yep.
new rivalries emerge, new traditions emerge. And so you hold on to the ones that stick around and the ones that last forever. And then you add new ones in. And to me, that's the experience. And we talked about it on the last one with NIL, but that's how the evolution of the sport's always been there. It's just yeah. faster now. It just turns over even faster.
I mean, it's incredibly fast yeah. now. I mean, there's so many different things, but it's a great point you make and one that I've been using, the Tulane LSU deal. Like Tulane used to be in the SEC. Tulane has a lot more SEC titles than current members yeah. of the Southeastern Conference, right? And if you would have told either one of our grandfathers or our grandmothers or anybody in that generation that Tulane LSU won't really be a thing, they won't be rivals, they won't be in the same conference, they're not going to play every year, they would have called you a liar.
Yep.
But that's just what it is. That has changed, right? They are no longer the rivals that they used to be. And that's okay because that's just how college athletics work. Like for me, like I consider Florida a gigantic rival for LSU because during my time and when I was playing, when I was around LSU football every single day, that was the rival because you talk 06, they were national champs. We were in 07. They were in 08. Of course, we did in 03, and Florida's one team to beat LSU.
Yep.
But if you talk to a guy, I was talking with Chris Doering at SEC Media Day, like they played LSU, but it wasn't the thing that it is now, right? And you fast forward only 10 years, and it was a gigantic thing, and it's still a big thing. But some of those things might have to go away. And trust me, it pains me when I say that LSU and Florida might not play every year. But to your point, 10 years after that, remove it, then that's going to be something that is the norm at that time, and you're just going to move forward.
Yep. I mean, even go back to 92, and the SEC championship game gets introduced, and that was controversial at the time. Yep. Now it's a staple of college football and SEC football. So I'm excited about it. I mean, I'm sure there's some downside somewhere, and we don't really know what the timeline's going to look like. Are they going to be in the conference next year? Are they going to be in the conference 2 years from now? I don't know. Is it even going to officially happen? Because it may not be finalized completely yet. Yeah. I think we think it will happen, yep. but it would be surprising if it didn't. But there's still a lot of unknowns, still a lot of uncertainties, but it's exciting to think about the potentials and possibilities. Okay. Oh, go ahead.
Now, one of the things, though, that's going to be, I think, the biggest discussion point is, are you going to have divisions or what everyone wants to term now as pods?
Yeah.
Right?
I like the pod conversation. I saw Peter Burns' tweet last week about the pods. I thought that was pretty interesting.
You want to know where that was created?
Did he steal it from you?
No. Oh, well, okay. We were out to dinner, and T-Bob was there as well, Doring, and the whole crew.
Nice.
At Superior Grill.
Nice. I love this. I love the behind-the-scenes story. This is great. That's where the pods were born.
That's kind of where we had that discussion. We were talking about who fits in which pod. Because the divisions, to me, no matter any way that you split that up, there's going to be people that just are completely angry, and you're going to have the same scheduling conflicts that you have now. If you go to this four-team system, you have four teams and four pods, which I don't really know where pods came from.
Is that they're groups in soccer.
I guess. I don't know. That's what we're rolling with. But there's four-team NFL divisions, but who knows? But let's go with pods. Then the scheduling helps because there should be no way that if you came to LSU in 2008 and then if you came to LSU in, let's say, four more years in 12 and four more years in 16, you've never played at Kentucky.
Yep.
Like, that shouldn't happen. Like, you shouldn't be in the same conference.
I'm excited about that trip this year because I've never been.
Oh, last time I was there, didn't go great for your boy, but it's okay. Like, we still wound up
still
on top.
Still got the natty. Still got the ring.
I mean, and if the hurricane doesn't happen with Mizzou,
yeah.
I mean, you still would not have been there either.
Yep.
Right? So you can't be in the same conference and go multiple three signing classes that don't play in that venue within the same conference.
I think it's a great idea. I think it's exciting. I think it's modern. I think it's innovative and ahead of the curve. And I like that the SEC is taking the forefront on some of this stuff because college sports is changing. We know the shifting landscape. For the SEC to take leadership there, the strong brands and teams and programs we have here, super exciting. Okay, let's give Alan Faneca a call. We'll talk to him about going into the Hall of Fame and his historic career, and we'll also talk offensive line, defensive line here in a second. All right, it's my pleasure to welcome to Hey Fightin' Podcast the man, the myth, the legend, Hall of Famer, former Tiger great, headed to the Hall of Fame this summer, Alan Faneca. Alan, thanks so much for spending some time with us. I know you've been pretty busy with going into the Hall of Fame, and I know you've just gotten started as a head coach at the high school level, so I appreciate your time today.
Oh, my pleasure, guys. I'm excited.
So let's start there. Let's start with how busy you've been, as we were talking right before we started recording. It's been a wild few months for you, I can imagine. Just give our listeners a little insight into what the process has been like for you, finding out that you're going into the Hall of Fame, but also kind of embarking on this new journey in your career.
Yeah, you know, so it's been a whirlwind tour a little bit, you know. You know, you start off and you get all the media attention and the interviews, and it kind of dies down, and then it starts picking up in the last month again. But you know, it's a great process, and it's great problems to have, really good problems to have. But it's the equivalent they told us when I got announced in Tampa. We had like a little introductory meeting, and they said it's the equivalent of planning 9 weddings, and I think they were short a couple of weddings.
Well, hey,
it's been great.
Yeah, and you've got all that going on, and obviously, I know you're excited, and you get the gold jacket, and everything surrounding that is fantastic. It's like the biggest honor, but I also know how much you love football, and you're trying to be a new head coach at the same time, so you're trying to have install, you're trying to figure out who the staff's going to be, you're trying to figure out your team, and I know how much that means to you as well.
Oh, man, it's been tough to delegate time. I'm always a morning person, but I mean, I've been waking up at 6 for a couple of months now, and I just wake up and I start game planning, I start installing, I start making up things, trying to design things for the football team, and then I go knock out some Hall of Fame stuff, and then I go work on my speech for a little bit, and then I got to go work out the boys at school. So it's a nonstop running around, but it's definitely an exciting time in my life.
All right, so I've got to ask you, we were talking about it a little bit before. I'm old school. I like 21 personnel. I like 12 personnel. Give me some tight ends and fullbacks. You don't have to give away too much information, but what kind of offense can we expect with Alan Faneca at the helm?
You know, we're going to be aggressive. I want to spread the ball around. I want kids to get the hands and the ball in their hands. I want everybody to be excited. But we're definitely everything's going to be based off of running at you and making you feel the threat and trying to stretch the field a little bit. So I think it fits our type of kids that we have in my high school, and we're going to give it a run.
Alan, I usually try to ask people questions they haven't been asked before, but I have to ask you a question you've been asked a million times. Finding out that you're going into the Hall of Fame, it was your 6th year of eligibility. I'm reading the story at Steelers.com, and it talks about patience being the key. To wait for that moment and for that moment to finally come, what were the emotions that you felt when you found out?
Surprise at first, because they definitely got me. I wasn't thinking anything was going to happen for another week. So I was just walking around my house like it was just another day. And I was ready to go, man. I was like, you know, when you go through it 6 years and you don't get the knock, you get the phone call to say, you know, better luck next year. You know, it's okay in year one, but, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, it just slowly gets worse. And it's like, all right, let's get on a plane and get out of here. Let's not even go to the Super Bowl and just move on. So you're ready to go. And that's kind of what I think I told David Baker, who knocked on the door. I said, all right, man, let's do this. I'm just ready to go. I've been waiting, and it's time. So I was excited, but they really caught me off guard. I was kind of floored. I didn't expect it to happen that day.
One of the things I've enjoyed is seeing, obviously, it means so much to you and your family, but what it means to your former LSU teammates, right? And we've had LSU guys going to the Hall of Fame, but when you win, it felt different. There was a lot of your old teammates that were so happy for you because they knew you deserved this moment. And if I'm not mistaken, I saw pictures. Y'all got together recently down on the bayou. I saw the former offensive line teammates. I saw Coach O. I saw Kevin Falk. That had to be a lot of fun. Can you tell us what that has kind of meant to you from that side of it?
Oh man, it's you know, it's really one of the best things about this is you get to tell people that maybe you have never told. You know, it's thank you, man. I appreciate you. I appreciate what you did for me, and you know, I didn't get here by myself. Everybody has a little piece in this journey, and you, to get to tell somebody that is pretty special. And that weekend, we went down to Grand Isle, and it was just another O-line fishing trip. When I played at LSU, that was what we did at the end of the spring semester. We went down there fishing for about 3 days before summer workouts began. And we did that every year. And as time goes on, it, you know, it slowly happens every 2 or 3 years. And it's been a couple years now. So it was time to get it organized. And that was a blast. I didn't expect all the pomp and circumstances and fanfare when we were down there, but it was great to get to hang out with everybody and talk stuff, and everybody was so excited, like you said.
Alan, there's a great story at healthytiger.net, which is our athletic department's sort of internal but not exclusively internal communications hub, but we've been doing a lot of features over there, and there's a great feature on you over there that I think Julia Palin wrote, and Julia's doing a great job. Yep. For us. And she talked about your high school basketball career and how that sort of led you to LSU. So as a basketball guy, I have to ask you that question. But I also want to add this part, too, that you were committed to a different school the night before signing day, and you changed your mind and picked LSU. So kind of tell me a two-part question, both how basketball led you to LSU and then that decision, not at the last minute, but pretty late in the recruiting game to pick LSU.
Yeah, so when I was coming out of high school, not a lot of schools knew about me. The schools I wanted to go to, I had scholarship offers, but not to the big schools that I really wanted to try and go to play football for. So, to backtrack a little bit, everybody found out about me at the end of the process is the easiest way to say it.
Okay.
And the current LSU O-line coaches, son is family friends with my basketball team's head coach and used to keep the books for us, and called his dad one day and was saying, hey, how's the recruiting going to Allen? And he had no idea who I was. And about 2 days later, he was at my high school talking to me. So he got the ball rolling on me getting recruited by LSU, because I still had not been recruited by LSU at that point. But other big schools have started to take notice. I actually sent out my own tapes to school. And so that's how it began. That's how I got to LSU. And then, but the night before, I did commit to another school, just a little east of LSU. And I realized that night, I was sitting in my room, and you're in high school and you put all these things on your walls. And I started counting all the LSU things I had on my walls. And I was like, oh, I am screwing the F up. I am like, what in the hell did I do today? And I called the next morning, called them up, canceled it, Curly Holman called me first before I could even get to him. And nobody told Curly, because I guess they were too scared to tell him that I committed to another school. And he was like dumbfounded. He said, hold on a second. He hung up the phone, called whoever to find out what was going on and why they didn't tell him. He called me back and was just like, congratulations, let's do this. Yes, it was. It's an interesting story.
And now that would be like all over Twitter and 24/7. Like as soon as you committed to the other school.
Yeah.
But back then the coach didn't even know. I mean, it's unbelievable how much has changed. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to talk to you real quick about what I believe to be the foundation that your group set for the success that LSU has today, because you were a group that at the end, like beating teams like Florida in 97, that really started something with LSU football. And the players that you had built that foundation, because look, let's call it like it is, right? There were some lean years before you got there and even at the beginning of your career. But just setting that foundation for the success that LSU has now, I mean, was that something that y'all could feel like in that moment? Like, hey, we've got something close to being a real blue blood program here, and hopefully the next wave can take a hold of this and get to that point?
You know, I don't think we really spoke about it, but we knew, you know, you don't just jump to an elite program like overnight. You could try, you know, but you just go for it. And I think when we all walked away from it, we were really proud of what we did. You know, like you said, we weren't a program that wasn't, we weren't making bowl games on a regular basis. And that's kind of like step one, right? You got to you got to build that foundation that you're talking about. You got to go to the bowl games. You got to start getting that recognition so you can start getting some of the bigger recruits in the better classes and start building and growing from there. And we definitely feel like we had that done. We did that. We feel like we're a part of it in that sense that you're talking about. We're kind of that base block at the bottom of the building that everything that's going on now is leaning on. So we definitely are proud of our time there and what we did. And man, I still tell people to this day, man, I can't believe anybody having fun, more fun than we had fun playing football at LSU. It's just too fun.
Alan, I remember being a college basketball player and running sprints at practice one day and looking to my teammate next to me. I said, whenever I quit playing basketball, I'm just going to get super fat and never exercise again because this sucks and I never want to do it again. You did the opposite. When you finished playing football, you transformed yourself from an offensive lineman to a marathon runner. First of all, what the hell were you thinking? What did you find fun about running?
I didn't get into the running right away.
Okay.
So I always told myself when I'm done playing, when I retire, I'm going to lose weight. Whether it sticks or not, whether I lose 50 pounds and then I put 80 back on, I'm just going to give it a try. So, I actually got down to about 100 pounds that I lost at one point. Wow. And it just started sticking. I started running, enjoying it. I still run a lot. I don't run as much as I did when I was running that marathon, for sure. But I enjoy it, and it's almost funny when I see pictures of me in my playing days. I don't really relate to that guy besides the memories. I relate more to my new self. it's just something I always said. You know, I didn't need to be 320 pounds the rest of my life, I figured. And you know, the day I lost 30 pounds, I was on the ground playing with my oldest daughter, who was about 7 at that time, and I got up off the floor. I just stood up. I didn't make that old man, big guy grunt. I didn't go, ugh, and like kind of push myself up. I just stood up.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is pretty good.
I still do that grunt.
Yeah, a little bit. But it is something that you can be like competitive in. Like I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I almost feel like it's something you had a challenge and you weren't playing football anymore. Because I know, like for me, now that I'm retired, I try to find anything in the world I can be competitive in just to have those competitive juices flowing. And it kind of sounds like that's where you were. Like, so, I want to do this.
Exactly.
I want to run.
So my wife, Julie, ran a half marathon and would always try and get me to run with her. And I had lost all my weight. And I was at that point where, like, I'm good. I'm going to go do my 20 minutes on the elliptical machine, the elliptical, and just call it a day. You go have a nice time out there. And then towards the end of her training, when she's kind of cycling down, she's just going to do like 1 and 2 miles. I was like, all right, I'll come with you. I'll go do a slow mile with you. And I kind of started gotten into the hook with her doing it. And after her race, she kept running. And then she got sick one day. And I was like, all right, I'm going to go. And I made a left instead of a right down in City Park in New Orleans and went the entire way around City Park. So my little 3 mile run that I normally went on turned into like 6.5, 7.5 miles. And it was like mano a mano, me versus the pavement. Like, I just barely got back to my truck. And I was like, all right, I like that. That was my juices definitely got flowing. And then I just said, I'm going to start training for a marathon. And I actually started out, I was going to run a half marathon. And then I went up to Pittsburgh and I'm down on the sideline talking to some of the trainers up there. And they were all athletes. They ran and did triathlons. And they were like, oh, you got that. You know, you ran 10 miles the other day. And I was like, you're calling me out. Like, I'm not looking for easy here. So I went home and immediately started training for the full marathon and pulled it off somehow. The last few miles are like coming to Jesus moments, regardless. I don't care how good of an athlete you are or what time you're coming for. Those last couple of miles are definitely serious.
Speaking of last couple of miles, class of 2021 Hall of Fame enshrinement is August 8th, 7 p.m. How's the speech coming?
You know what, man? I'm actually practicing it right now before we started here. It is done, set, and final.
Nice.
They're shorter this year. They're killing me with it. They're shorter, but they're threatening to give us the elevator music at 8 minutes. But it's going to be great. I'm super excited.
Look, Alan, I'm not the guy going to press that button on your elevator music because I've seen you play football too many times in person as a fan and on the other sideline. I don't care that you're not 320 pounds anymore. I have seen you in person. So whoever pushes that button, just let them know, like, you're coming after them.
Oh, I've already had conversations with the powers that be, a couple of them, and let them know that I need to be left alone. I don't care. I don't want lights at 6 minutes and buzzers at 7 minutes. I'm going right. 8 minutes, maybe a couple seconds over. You need to just leave me alone. I'm going the full limit.
Love to hear it.
Yeah, you've earned that right. Alan, right. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Can't wait to see your speech, and congratulations.
Thanks, guys. It's been fun.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Alan, man. Always a pleasure.
Take care.
All right, Esther, let's talk offensive line, defensive line as we continue our position previews for the 2021 season for LSU. Let's start with the offensive line. And I think the first question there is Dare Rosenthal, somebody that we expected to be at left tackle this season, no longer part of the team. He's transferred to Kentucky, and so there's a hole at left tackle. Other than that, you're pretty experienced across the line. You bring back just about everybody else from last season. You would have basically brought back your entire offensive line. Right. Now you've got a replacement to be found at left tackle. What's your general consensus on how that position in the whole line develops?
Well, I do agree that Dare is a loss. I don't think there's any question about that. But you also could say there was a lot of times over the last couple of years that someone's had to fill in for Dare. Like yeah. Dare's missed a lot of games. And so the core that you have coming back, that was the core that was out there for majority of the time. Ed Ingram's one of the most undervalued players in college football. I think Austin Deculus and how much experience he has is undervalued as well. You bring back Shanahan at center, and then you've really got a couple of options there at right guard, Hines, Bradford, and Bradford also could potentially kick out to left tackle. But Cam Wire, to me, was really an unknown last year yep. whenever he had to play. I don't think any of us knew exactly how he was going to handle that. He went inside and outside, and I think he held his own. So you have someone who has experience playing inside and outside that I thought did a really nice job a year ago. So I don't know who's going to take that position, but you have candidates to take that position that have played some football, that have experience. And so the offensive line is still a strength. And I mentioned earlier in the podcast, a lot of people were high on LSU because of what they had coming back. And almost everyone said, yes, they've got skill players. They've always had skill players. Where I'm impressed is on the offense and defensive line. That was really something they thought was a strength, because not many times in college football can you return this much depth and experience on the offensive line. Austin Deculus is going to leave LSU, I think, starting or playing the most games
yep.
than anybody's ever done before. So I like that group. And that group knows that the level of play has to go up even more so this year. And we're talking more in the running game than we are the pass protection part of it. So not only do you have these guys coming back, you've got three guys really that were key contributors to the national championship team. I mean, Ed Ingram, Chasen Hines had to play going all the way back to 2018 against Georgia, right? The Auburn game where he has to play, and I don't think, he knew he was going to have to play
yep.
in that contest, and we've spoke on Deculus. So not all experience is always good experience coming back, but this is a group that has championship moments, and you're coming back, and they're a really tight-knit unit as well.
So do you think the comparisons to the 2019 line feel accurate in the sense that the 2018 line was a little bit of a hit and miss spot? They struggled at times. They were okay at times, but they came back as an experienced unit in 2019. And obviously all the offensive pieces came together, certainly made their life easier, but then they're the best offensive line in the country, won the Joe Moore Award. This offensive line, it seems there's a similar feel in terms of like your centers back in Liam Shanahan. He's got a year under his belt. He graded out pretty well last season. You would think he'd, with a full season under his belt of SEC football, adjusting from where he was at Harvard, now he's got his legs under him. You got Ed Ingram, you mentioned, you got Deculus, guys that you know what you're going to get out of them. And then you've got some talented kind of swing guys that can play multiple spots. Does that comparison feel accurate? What are the similarities and differences?
No, I think it does, because there were times in 2018 that you could see that offensive line have some success. But look, they had their struggles as well. And they really worked on getting to be the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line, and that didn't happen by chance. I mean, that was a group that knew they had work to do, and I feel like talking with Austin Deculus at Media Day, they've kind of had the same things. Like, we've done some good things, but also the standards got to be higher. And now you're talking about bringing in a new offensive line coach as well, kind of in the middle of that, but that transition has seemed to be something that's worked out extremely easy for everybody involved, because Brad Davis knows Louisiana. I mean, he's from Louisiana. I mean, he's from here, right? All of that, and that might sound like a small thing, but in recruiting and just fitting into the culture, we have a different culture here. That's fine. That's what makes us unique. He fits into all of that. So that seems to be a transition that's worked incredibly well for everybody involved. So I think the comparisons are really fair. This group has done a lot of work to be better. They have more in the tank. We hadn't even talked about like Dumervil and Dellinger and some of the young, talented offensive tackles that could, you know, in camp surprise someone, and maybe they're going for a starting spot. So you have depth there. It's a position where you have experience. If you don't, if it doesn't work out, that is on you not making those improvements because all the foundation's laid.
That was going to be my next question for you, because you guys talk to Coach O every week on Off the Bench, and I know y'all are always talking about every position battle. We'll talk about defensive line in a second, because I know you brought that up this week in your interview with them.
Yep.
But I wanted to talk about some of the names you mentioned. We know the established names, Liam Shanahan, Ed Ingram, Austin Deculus, even a guy like Chasen Hines. Like we know the guys who have started and played a lot.
Yep.
Of the who from that category of guys, the Anthony Bradfords, the Garrett Dellingers, the Thomas Perrys, Marlon Martinez, you kind of Charles Turner, Xavier Hill, Cardell Thomas, the guys that haven't played as much, but we remember them from the recruiting trail. They were brought in to make an impact. Any of those names stick out, stand out to you?
I think to me it has to be Anthony Bradford.
Okay.
Because if you go back and let's say, you know, we're talking March of last year, Anthony Bradford in Coach O's mind was a starter. And for whatever reason, and, you know, there's things that we could discuss. I mean, I know weight was an issue for him, but he was considered a starter a year ago, right? And he is someone that if you talk to people in the building, he has done things the right way to try to be that starter that he was considered for Coach O a year ago before the season started. He has the frame that you want. He's as athletic as you'll find. This is a guy that has the skill set to be able to do it. Now, as we know, you got to put all that together and you got to do it on the field. But to me, Coach O loves mentioning him because of what he's shown him on the field. It's just got to be more consistent. And if that consistency comes, then you're talking about, in my opinion, a high-level SEC starter.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think you look back at 2019 and make that comparison again. That swing offensive lineman or that sixth offensive lineman is so important. And that year it was kind of Ed and Adrian McGee, and you thought maybe Ed would come back and take Adrian McGee's spot, but then Adrian McGee held onto his spot, but then you had ability there because guys go out for a snap or a series or a game or two, and you need people to step in. And I'm hoping I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. Maybe I'm biased because Ross worked here for so long in the market. But Garen Dellinger, I'm checking the website.
One of those things, and we've had a couple of names that have happened this in LSU. I've heard Dellinger, and I thought the same thing. Am I too close to Ross here?
Yeah, that's. I'm
or is
concerned.
It Dellinger? Because I've heard that as well.
Let's call him Deli. Let's call him Deli to be safe here. I've heard good things about Garrett.
Name him
G. Deli.
That's where we are here.
I've heard good things about him from people in the building, both from a skill set standpoint as a guy that can play basically any spot across the offensive line, but also a personality standpoint, a character standpoint. And you know how big Coach O and Jack Marucci and that crew is on character and guys being able to come in and get things done. And he sort of fits that mold too. So excited to see how that shuffles out on that side of the ball. I think that's going to be something to watch in camp.
One of the things I want to add about our guy, Deli, so now I just call him our guy. You can call him Deli. Nicknames here. He's here for a reason. He's not from Louisiana. He's not from a border state. I mean, he is from Michigan. So for him to end up down here, he had a passion to play football for LSU. There's a reason he is here. He could have stayed home in Big Ten country. He could have had a lot of success up there. But he wanted to come to LSU, and it means something maybe even a little bit more to him. So to go get a guy like that, to have him down here, there's a purpose, there's a reason for both parties involved. He's someone, same thing, I've heard great things about in the building. And I'll be a little biased. I don't mind getting my offensive lineman from the Midwest.
Yeah.
That's something that I don't hate. So
they breed him
well. I'm excited to see what he can do and how much he can grow within this first year.
Ethan Postich vibes. Pokic. Remember how Postich.
Yeah.
So similar. Hard last name to pronounce.
Yeah.
Ethan Postich certainly established himself here. I'm sure Deli will.
Postich.
Let's talk D-line. Because I know you were asking Coach O about D-line. You're excited. Is that the position you're most excited to watch this fall to see how it...
It is for me, because not every position battle is created the same. There's position battles where it's like, I hope someone steps up because we need someone to step up, and we've seen those before. This one is, how in the world are you going to decide who plays?
It's unbelievable. The talent and the names, it's unbelievable.
And there's some edge rushers, and we could talk edge rushers. We could have the Andre Anthony, B.J. Ojulari. We could talk about multiple names, right? Ali Gay. There's going to be some talent there, and that's fascinating. But to me, the interior defensive front, I truly don't know how you're going to decide who plays. I mean, Joseph Evans is a name that probably doesn't get the respect it deserves. It's the first one out of Coach O's mouth.
Yeah, I love
him. He loves his style of play. He loves what he can do. And then you start talking about, like, wait a minute, Neil Farrow and Glenn Logan are still here?
Yep.
Those guys, with all the experience they have, are still in that rotation. Jaquelin Roy. I mean, Mason Smith obviously being the big recruit that he was and looking the part so far, being here since the spring. And there's other names, Cody, that we could throw out there. Again, that's why people are high on LSU turning it around this year, is because on both lines of scrimmage, you have experience, you have skill, and on the defensive line, you have elite skill.
And it feels like you finally have the personnel for the 40 front that Coach O and Durante Jones want to run. And look, Durante Jones is going to be multiple. There'll be times where he does more of a 30 front, and he's going to mix it up. But you have the depth there to play four defensive linemen and to have a rotation of at least two deep and probably even three deep at certain spots. When you talk about the edge, Ali Gay is back. We know what he can do both as a pass rusher, as a run stopper. I think he's hungry. You want to talk about character. That's a guy they just rave about his character. I think he's poised for a breakout year. Could have left last year. Could have made some money in the NFL. Wanted to come back and prove himself. I think he's going to have a really big year. You mentioned Andre Anthony at the edge, but then you have, so that's kind of your two bigger defensive linemen, but then you have your B.J. Ojulari's that can line up on the edge and just get after the quarterback and provide some pressure off the edge, and we saw his ability last year to get after the quarterback a little bit. They've got a lot of options there that Durante Jones can play with, that Coach O can play with, that Andre Carter can work with as the defensive line coach and provide rotation depth, freshness, which – when you go back to LSU's best teams, that's always been a staple. They've always been able to rotate guys in and out, have depth, keep guys fresh so that you're not counting on a Mason Smith to be the guy now. He can just go in and be a guy. He can be a guy and develop and become the full potential talent that he is and not have that pressure on him. But if he's playing great, hey, keep him in there. And if he's not, you can pull him out and you can put in a Jaquelin Roy or a Joseph Evans or a Jacobian Giller. The names and the talent and the pedigree is there.
Our championship team in 07, our best player was a defensive tackle.
Yep.
I mean, he was the driving force
pretty
behind what we did. I mean, he might be one of the best to ever do it. But to your point, he rotated some because that's what that position is. Charles Alexander played a lot. Marlon Favorite played a lot. I mean, you had a lot of guys. Drake Nevis, a young Drake Nevis, was playing. I mean, you had guys that were always coming in. And you've got to be able to have that depth at that position because the defensive line rotates more than any other position on the football field, right? You're going to try to create a new group every time you can. Sometimes you can't.
Yep.
Sometimes you go to Florida in 2017, and those four cats got to play every single snap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the way it is. Coach O has fixed that depth issue, right? We know that's a position that obviously he is hands-on with. They have created a talent pool to be able to have two true front lines that are SEC level. I'm talking like one through four on both first and second team, where you can have either group in there and feel really good about your chances. And so when you start talking defensive tackle, I mean, I left off Jacobian Guillory.
Yeah.
That is a guy that was as high as the recruit as you'll find.
Yep.
And he's going to play this year. That just kind of tells you what the names are, who they're going to be. Eric Taylor's a guy. We mentioned Joseph Evans. I mean, we could go name after name after name. And Bryce Langston, I haven't mentioned him. Every time we talk to Coach O,
the
defensive line brings up, his name is one of the ones that Coach O says. So it is definitely a very talented group that if you play in that group, you better be a good player. You won't last very long.
I'll put you on the spot. If you had to guess at the first four and the second four right now, where would you go? You mentioned Evans. You go ahead and pencil him in as a starter. Look, it's going to be flexible. It's going to change from game to game. It's going to be something that shifts based on matchups, based on who's playing well.
Right.
But, you know, Glenn Logan's obviously started a bunch for you. Neil Farrell's had a bunch of snaps for you. Where would you start building that four at?
I mean, it feels like you're going to have Ali Gay and Andre Anthony be probably the first two edge rushers.
Yep.
Joseph Evans, with the way Coach O talks about him, you're right. And then you've got a decision to make. Do you want to go with experience and Glenn Logan, or do you want to go with Jaquelin Roy? I would assume
they
played
great at the end of the last year, by the way.
I think he did. I mean, I thought he took games over at times.
Yeah.
to me, if you ask me today, I put him as that other starter.
Yeah.
By Evans. And then, but look, that gives you a second unit. Neil Farrell can be inside with Glenn Logan. Talk about experience. And B.J. Ojulari can be another edge rusher. I mean, you have a lot of guys that can play really multiple positions. I mean, Neil Farrell can even kick out if he had to. I mean, he can kick out. He can play inside and outside.
Certainly
he can
athletic
do both.
Enough. Great high school basketball player.
Look, that's going to be a rotation of eight players. There's going to be starters, and I use air quotes here. There's going to be starters, but it's also going to be a unit that always rotates. And there's candidates to have other edge rushers as well, because that's one position as a young football player. There's not a whole lot of thinking if you're in that third down package.
It's cheetah package.
Line up outside, go get the quarterback, make him feel like you're there. I mean, Savion Jones is someone that does not look like he did when he first got to LSU. I mean, he is rapidly gaining good weight. That's someone that could be in a cheetah package. You could see him there on third down. So the possibilities are endless on the defensive front, and they just have to make sure they get the best rotation as far as what chemistry works together.
Yep.
Like, you want to put two defensive tackles that play well off each other next to each other, not just because we feel like they're the best as far as individual talent.
Yeah, and you know, part of the reason I asked you for your four and your first four, second four, wasn't necessarily for the prediction aspect, because it is going to shift and it is going to change, and it's going to be a first down package and a third down package, and it's going to be multiple. I don't think you can necessarily label guys starter and backup anymore on your defensive line and your outside edge rushers, because, you know, I do think Durante Jones, having talked to him about it, it's going to be a 40 front base, but yeah. I think they're going to play some 30. Like, he learned under Dave Aranda at Baylor, and so they might use that some. They're going to be, I think, a prediction, not based on anything I've seen, because I haven't been out there because camp hasn't started. Camp's right around the corner. Is they're going to be multiple, and they're going to use a lot of different guys. And so anything we predict now could look pretty dumb in just a few weeks. but at the same time, I wanted to get some of those names out there, because that's going to be the spot, right? Like, I think we'll talk about linebackers and cornerbacks and safeties on the next episode. A lot of that stuff we kind of know. Like, there's some question marks, but we kind of know. Like, Stingley and Ricks. Okay.
Right.
Like, what are we going to say about those guys on the next episode? They're really good. Okay. There's not a whole lot to add there. But this is a spot in particular, the defensive line, where just a number of guys could step up, could play, could contribute. But that's a spot that's going to be better too, because last year, as bad as, you know, the defense struggled a lot of it was at the back end. But the more pressure they can provide up front, the more solid they can be against the run early, the better it makes things on the back end and takes less pressure off of your safeties and corners to communicate and pass guys off and be more efficient there. Yes, that unit, the secondary and the pass coverage has to improve, no question about it. And the talent is there for them to be very productive. But it starts up front, and they've got to not only, you know, have this talent and depth, but really produce for you.
Yeah, to your point, third down is going to look completely different than first and second down defensively. Even the best 4-3 teams, they go to a more of a 30 front when it's third down. So you could see a scenario where it's Mason Smith or Quaylen Roy, and let's throw Neil Farrell being the down lineman, and B.J. Ojulari being the guy who's like the rover and lines up and just wreaks havoc from different spots. You're going to see multiple defenses. Within a 4-3, you have that ability, right? Because you build it throughout your defensive line. Like, when you're a 3-4, you recruit a little differently. Like, you look for a zero nose, you look for all those things. When you're a 4-3, you can recruit guys that have different skill sets, and really third down becomes the money down then, because then you put your best pass rushers on the field. So I'm excited to see how he plays first and second down, but I think I might be even more excited how third down works out for LSU.
Okay, we'll end with this. Just to pivot away from the offensive line, defensive line conversation, and we'll be talking about these positions throughout the fall in fall camp. I've always asked you guys to send our listeners to send in audio questions. We got a couple. I want to play one. It's not really a question. It's a story, and it's a story for you. I'm going to play it in the microphone. I hope you can hear it. It's from David Jacoby. I think there's a little gap here at the beginning, but this is a good story, and I want to see your reaction to it live.
Hey, Mr. Hester. This is David Jacoby. I went to LSU. I was in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, and Pete Rose was signing baseballs. When he found out I went to LSU, he couldn't stop talking about Jacob Hester and what a great running back you are. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Wait.
What a great story. What a great story. David Jacoby, thanks for sending that in. Anyone else that wants to send in a voice question, it's in the description of the episode. But if you go to anchor.fm/hey-fightin-podcast, you can send a question there. Okay.
Hold up.
Yep.
Pete Rose knows who I am?
He loves you. He's your biggest fan.
Okay, I've got to clip
Charlie
that
Hustle
up.
Himself.
I got to, no doubt about it. I mean, I got to clip that up and send that to my father. My father's favorite professional athlete of all time is Pete Rose. So yeah. I don't know how that happened, but that's pretty cool.
Okay, well, you're speechless, and we'll leave it at that. I'm going to send you that audio. Thank you so much, David, for sending that in. We do have one more question. It was it's from Logan Schott, and it's a hilarious Would You Rather is the name of the thing. We'll save that for the next one. That'll be a teaser. Okay. If anyone else wants to send in a voicemail, send it in again. It's in the episode description. I love hearing your voices instead of our voices all the time. It's good to get those from you. It's something we want to use throughout the year. So, Hester, thank you for this. Kind of got a bunch of stuff knocked out today. It's 2 days. We're being efficient with what we do. We're getting better as we go along. Excited for the season ahead.
All my mind can go towards is Pete Rose would have been a hell of a fullback with the way he used to bulldoze catchers. And now that's going to be my thought the rest of the day. So,
there you go. I mean, who would have thought that we'd end on the Pete Rose note here on Hey Fighting Podcast? But that's we're going to get out on Pete Rose. So thank y'all for listening. We'll see you next time.
Lightning's bold. We fight to hold the glory of the purple and gold. Come on, you Tigers. I said fight, fight, fight. Victory.